This episode is made possible by Awin. Two-thirds of digital ad spend currently flows to the three big tech platforms, Google, Meta, and Amazon. But their auction-based ad models favor their own bottom line and inflate costs at a time when every single marketing dollar counts. Awin's affiliate partnerships platform offers a real alternative to big tech and puts you back in control of your ad spend. Want to find out how? Visit awin.com/emarketer to learn more.
Now is the time for advertisers to ask, are they getting value for their money? And I hope they will find that they can get that in affiliate. So I would like to see that percentage come down in favor and not have $2 out of three go to those sites and only a dollar split between the millions of partners that we can offer.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, August 24th. Listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin. I'm Marcus. Today's fact. Most folks will know that Mount Everest in the Himalayas is the highest mountain in the world. It's about 5.5 miles high, or 29,000 feet. That's cruising altitude for planes. It's too high. As of January 2023, 6,338 people, just over 6,000 people, different people, have climbed it and reached the top. Kami Rita Sherpa of Nepal has reached the summit the greatest number of times, 26. What? Oh, just climbed Mount Everest 26 times, no big deal. No. Anyway, today's real topic is a conversation between Insider Intelligence's senior analyst Max Willens and Alexandra Forsch, president of the Americas at Awin, about affiliate and partner marketing. Then I'll see you folks in the second half for In Other News to discuss programmatic ad buying at the movies and YouTube's next anti-ad blocking measure.
Thanks so much for joining us, Alex. I'm glad to have you on the podcast today. We're here to talk about affiliate marketing in 2023 and I guess beyond. Why don't you situate our audience here and talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you sort of see being the state of play for affiliate marketing at the moment? You and I just got back from Affiliate Summit East, where we probably had very different experiences, you having attended it many more times than I have. But what's the sort of state of the industry at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's a pivotal time. You know, I think we are on the verge of something new and better. And if I can back up a little bit, there is one industry study that gives us a little bit of insight in how big the U.S. affiliate marketing industry is. And it was assessed at $71 billion in revenue, about $10 million, $9.1 in investment, and an ROI of 12-1, right? And, you know, that's meaningful if you compare it to the research that was done 3 years prior, which actually shows the improvement. You know, we almost doubled the investment in the channel over that time and saw our CAGR 14%. So I think it's definitely a rising industry, which is, it's important to point out. But I do believe, and this is really painful to admit, in the 12 and a half years that I've been with the industry, we are having the same questions. It's like, how do we attract more investment in the channel? You know, that started 2.5 years ago, as I said, and it continues on. And so I think we just haven't won the hearts and minds of senior decision makers. It's considered a very tactical channel and not a strategic one. And as such, it's not as attractive. So when I say pivotal time, I think the current economic climate, you know, along with, you know, the merger that is happening between brand performance and content commerce moving into affiliate, gives us a new chance to show what the affiliate marketing channel really has to offer the industry. It has evolved quite a bit, but we've not changed our reputation, you know? So there's more that we can do. And hopefully with directing more business into the channel because of tougher times right now, a more challenging economic climate, we have the ability to show what it can do, what it can deliver, and basically prove that it's no longer a linear and very one-dimensional channel that is supporting elastic click activity, which is not super attractive. So I'm kind of excited that we got to this point. I believe there's a lot of opportunity for us.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of interesting kind of macro tailwinds behind it potentially, and we'll get into them. But I want to key in on something that you mentioned a moment ago, which is this kind of nagging perception of this is a very tactical channel, you know, ultra bottom funnel, you know, possibly not even incremental. And there is some research that you see out in the wild, some of it quite recent, that shows that, you know, for folks that are believers in the channel already, that's starting to happen a little bit. I mean, where do you sort of see that happening as far as making the case that affiliate can be strategic, that it can be full funnel? What do you sort of see there that looks encouraging to you?
Yeah. I mean, I can certainly share the story that we're telling, and that's based on data that we're seeing on our network, right? And opportunities that we bring to the channel. So if you look at where affiliates, it's traditionally in the marketing funnel, you said bottom feeder, close to the action. But we are actually trying to explain the channel in a new way using Scott Galloway's clock model. I don't know if you're familiar with it. We've been speaking about it quite a bit, but it looks at it and not in a linear, but in a cyclical format, right? It says that journeys are far more multidimensional. You know, they're not as linear, like consumers are influenced in different ways across different channels, et cetera. And affiliate can support outside just that pre-purchase phase, you know? So in the clock model, you have a pre-purchase phase that sits between midnight or 12 o'clock and 4, right? And that's all the activity that you would find in the traditional marketing channel. So from driving awareness to action. And the affiliate channel really invited a lot more partners, you know? So what we see is a lot of engagement, inspirations, consideration research that is happening with partners like mass media, influencers, site review sites, et cetera, especially in this climate where consumers want to make really assured decisions when it comes to like a higher product particular. And so we see, you know, a lot of touch points in the journey and a lot more top funnel touch points, you know, within the affiliate channel already as that. So I do believe we've moved out from that bottom view to much more, with a much more diverse partner set. And mass media started working in the affiliate channel about 7 years ago, I think, when display was no longer, right? And they looked for other income streams. They really, you know, offer that branding and point of inspiration for brands now that sits up a funnel. And we can offer that in the affiliate channel capacity. But in that clock model, we want to go further and say, like, we're no longer just driving traffic to a site, you know, and then leave it up to the e-commerce store to convert it. We now have partners, and again, that's included in the diversity of partners that are tech focused, and essentially they're offering marketing innovations to advertisers. So anything from improving customer experiences, UX experiences, recommending products, you know, couponing more intelligently, all these solutions that could actually turn a shopper into a buyer, we can offer and make available through the channel now. And we can do this on a CPA basis without the upfront investment or any development time on the advertiser side. So that I think is super lucrative and really important to understand, as especially in retail, you know, there's this a fewer purchases made. So everybody's competing for the same shoppers. And once you have them on your side, you want to convert them, right? So there's technology that can support you with that. And it's brought to advertisers through the affiliate channel. And then we also don't stop there. So we can support advertisers post-purchase. And here the goal really is to, again, connect them with technology partners and parts to drive referrals out of existing customers. We know that a friend referral counts for a lot, right? And that obviously lowers acquisition costs for clients, but also we can partner advertisers with other brands. And that's really impactful too, because post-purchase, you can improve your own loyalty by offering something that is very exclusive, that promotes a brand with great affinity, that provides value to a customer, right? And also potentially earn a new income stream as a result by promoting, becoming technically an affiliate in the space and promoting another brand or being promoted in this fashion. So it is far more complex, and I think it can answer to far more strategic goals. And it's very customizable. And with that, I think it is more attractive, you know, and it should be considered. So, you know, we can prove that in consumer journey touch points that we're recording, but also, you know, we see this demand when we talk about technology partners, right? Last year, it already made up $36 million in revenues for our clients. And we see a run on these partners, especially in this climate. So there's a need and there's an interest. And again, for instance, if your US domain converts really well, but you're looking to expand and your UK domain doesn't convert in the same way, you can leverage these partners in the way that you find most suitable. So on certain domains or in support of certain activities or product launches, et cetera, there's a lot of customization that sits with these partners. So we see that. And then from a brand to brand partnership, I think that's also very exciting because, I mean, that has accounted, I think, for $60 million just last year. And we've grown the volume of partners that want to work in this capacity by 70%. We have over 1,200 brands that want to work in this capacity. So there's a lot of opportunity to do a lot more in the channel and do it in a very controlled way. Margin control, you choose your partners, you know, and you run the campaign that best fits your needs or helps deliver against an objective.
there's a ton in there to unpack. But I
just stop me.
Message received. I'll butt in on the next one. But I guess I am curious about the sort of influencer dimension here, because I mm-hmm. feel like one of the things I see as a potential major tailwind is influencers, because there is so much conversation around the role that these creators play in this different parts of the digital economy. How do you sort of see their role evolving? Because one of the things that's historically been true of creators is that they would, you know, they like being paid on performance, but they really like getting paid just a flat fee for getting a name out there and throwing a hashtag on it. How do you sort of see the relationship between affiliate and influencer evolving?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because when we, you know, do brand acquisition on our side, right, we start a lot of conversations now around this influencer topic. You know, and I think that's very encouraging, and that supports that point on tailwind, you know, through the channel. A lot of brands are looking to just, you know, combine that upper funnel performance and really look at the value that it drives in terms of ROAS, but also in terms of funnel activity. You know, we use SignalView as an attribution measurement tool. So, and our belief is that, you know, like in a soccer match, you need an entire team to score, right? Not just a striker, right? So influencers have a role in this, right? And you want to assess that value and you want to identify the influencers that can contribute to that end goal, which is a conversion, right? So we offer that visibility. And what that offers to brands then is then work with these affiliates in a more focused way. So as opposed to paying everybody a flat fee based on their claimed following, et cetera, right? And just assuming that this means value, you can actually work with the partners that you see supporting a transaction, right? And then, you know, compensate them on a CPA basis, but also then further invest in placements. You know, you have another way of basically, you know, taking what is a very large universe and tailoring it and focusing on the activities that mean, you know, are most valuable to you. And I think that's what that merging of channels enables. And I think that's where I feel like there is that opportunity to tailwind from a network perspective. Our goal is to be integrated with all the social media platforms. So every advertiser essentially has that ability to combine that upper funnel view with, you know, the impact any and every partner has on performance.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And thinking about how technology has sort of enabled that fuller picture of what's possible, I want to sort of turn the conversation toward the technology partners you alluded to. We did a report on this space last year, and when I spoke to people for it, the thing that came up again and again as a sort of potential growth area were the technology partners who, you know, as you say, like enable lots of on-site optimization. And into this moment when everyone is so e-com focused, I think that that's potentially a huge growth area. How do you kind of keep abreast of what's possible there and even just educate clients on what's possible as well? I mean, it seems like there's a new kind of a newcomer in this space every 15 minutes. So how do you sort of break that all down and show people what's possible?
Yeah, I mean, we have a dedicated team to actually identifying the partners that seem to best fit in the channel and offer the greatest value. And then, you know, they help, you know, setting these up. But what we're trying to do is integrate them in a very simple way via master tag, you know, so integrate them deeply so merchants can activate them and run them on a trial basis and get comfortable with the technology. We have featured them in the AON 100 Power Report, really highlighting what some of these partners can do to obviously, storytelling is really important, you know, like what the successes that other companies have seen as quite relevant, especially if you're smaller and, you know, you don't know if it makes sense to run an activity that a large brand is running. But then also most recently, we've just introduced a login discovery directory where you can actually identify these partners and self-activate these partners with a single click. So we're trying to put these opportunities forward. We're doing a ton of education. I personally have to speak about this a lot of times with a slide that I think is quite impactful. It shows that the common e-commerce problems and how we have different options of solving these and how there's so many partners behind these and advertisers really have the choice of who they want to work with and which capacity to solve the overcome their issues. So it's a very strong message, and it's probably one of the most photographed slide that we're sharing at events.
Makes a lot of sense. I want to, for the last question, I guess, before we ask what you sort of see happening in the future, I want to return to the sort of brand partnership piece, because I feel like one of the things that is a potential tailwind is the sort of rise of retail media, which has just captivated the digital ad conversation. And I think potentially augurs really well for affiliate marketers, but potentially also, you know, complicates the picture. How do you sort of see retail media, you know, aiding affiliate marketing and aiding the story you guys tell about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, you particularly marketers and, you know, a lot of research around it. And I think that the third big wave as described really sits with these multi-category sites, right? Amazon and Walmart. It's not necessarily for the average affiliate program manager because it's really hard to replicate that scale and success through ad spend. So what we're offering is a different option, right? Like, you know, like you're not promoting a different product or another brand's product on site, but you're forming a partnership where it's post sale. You know, in terms of essentially it benefits partners because they can, you know, acquire new customers, you know, drive customer loyalty because they can offer something, as I said, of value, which is really important. And then also have the ability to make an income stream, you know, from an income stream from it. So it's a little bit different than the traditional retail media space. And as we see, where an advertiser just promotes multiple products on site, you know, we take that wholesale, but offer it in a way where any advertiser can participate. And then also if it's too complicated, you know, because sometimes it requires CRM integration, et cetera, we may have tech partners for that, like BrandSwap, that can actually facilitate that technology and make it super easy for two companies to engage. So yeah, I think there's a great opportunity, but just as a new partner set that can drive value, you know, and reach customers in areas where a brand may not reach it, but do it in a way where it is surrounded by user affinity, right?
That makes a lot of sense. This is actually really and truly my last question. You mentioned that this is sort of a pivotal moment for affiliate as a channel. And I agree that there's been these sort of nagging questions that have dogged it. And I do think that this channel is sort of finally in a good position to sort of answer them definitively for the decision makers. As you sort of think about the near-term future, what are you going to be watching most closely to see if this, you know, opportunity is sort of seized upon?
My personal intention is to bring down big tech. That's a mouthful, right? No, but I do believe that there is an absolute opportunity for affiliate networks to not compete with another, but actually, you know, promoting the value that we can offer, you know, delivering on choice of partners. So there's millions of partners, you know, there's an affiliate, like an app, there's an app for everything, right? You know, the control the margins and the ability to customize. And that does not exist with big tech. If you're looking at where ad media spend is concentrating today, it's with Meta, Google, and Amazon, right? And advertisers don't have that control the margins there, especially as the spaces become very competitive and margins diminish. So I think now is the time for advertisers to ask, are they getting value for their money? And I hope they will find that they can get that in affiliate if they're not seeing it there. So I would like to see that percentage come down in favor and not have $2 out of three go to those sites and only a dollar, you know, split between the millions of partners that we can offer.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex. It was nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
All right, folks, that's it for the lead. Time for the second half of the show. Max is going to stick around to help me out today. In other news, programmatic ad buying comes to movie theaters and YouTube's next anti-ad blocking measure. Story one, programmatic ad buying comes to movie theaters, writes Insider Intelligence's Senior Director of Briefings, Jeremy Goldman. He explains that National Cinemedia, an in-cinema ad company, plans to venture into programmatic ad buying for movie screens starting in Q4. The company operates in 1,500 US theaters, reaching around 20,000 movie screens. But Max, the most interesting sentence in this article about programmatic ad buying coming to movie theaters is what and why?
So this felt like a move that was both smart and inevitable, Marcus, but in answer to your question, the sentence that I think is most telling here is from this description of what NCM brings to the table. So it says this data, meaning data that it has from online ticket sales and theater loyalty partnerships, is invaluable in driving in theater campaigns and can be supplemented with online retargeting via partnerships with online publishers, including YouTube and Yahoo. So this is basically saying that, you know, add cinema screens to the vast pool of places you can buy and sell video inventory. And I think that there's a way in which this is going to, there might be some initial concerns about quality control or, you know, tapping into the premium nature of the environment. But I've seen some pretty wacky ads while waiting for my movies to start for years. And so I guess this is not going to buck that trend too much.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating. So a recent study by Lumen, an ad research company that employs eye tracking technology, found 97% of moviegoers focus on the big screen when ads are playing. 97%, everyone, versus just 35% of TV viewers. As the article notes, we expect US programmatic digital out-of-home advertising to nearly double by 2025, approaching $1.2 billion. Story 2, YouTube's next anti-ad blocking measure is a countdown timer. Rise Insider Intelligence Briefing's analyst Daniel Konstantinovich, he notes that YouTube's crusade against ad blockers is entering its next stage as the company starts testing an anti-ad blocking tool that displays a minute-long countdown timer that will lock ad blocker users out of content when it hits zero. Anti-ad blocking measures have existed for a while, but Daniel thinks YouTube's stand against blockers is a shift in the balance between consumers' desire to avoid ads and the corporate need to advertise. But Max, the most interesting sentence in Danny's article on YouTube's next anti-ad blocking measure is what and why?
I think in this case, it's a piece of data from Civic Science, which found in 2022 that over 50% of adults use an ad blocker, with adoption being even higher among younger users. And I like this because it sets up the sort of, you know, unstoppable force against unmovable object storyline. A big reason why ad blocking, which has been a cat and mouse game for years, and so it's hard to say if this is going to be decisive in any way, but a big feature in the sort of story of ad blocking is that a lot of the content that's available online is available elsewhere online. And so if a publisher sets up a roadblock using Admiral or whatever and says, it looks like you're using an ad blocker, a lot of users will simply say, okay, fine, I'll read this news story from somewhere else, or okay, fine, I'll get this recipe from somebody else. YouTube has lots and lots and lots and lots of content on there that is really just not available anywhere else. And so even though there are people who have an almost philosophical resistance to viewing advertising anywhere, a lot of them also spend an awful lot of time looking at content on YouTube, and they're going to be hard-pressed to find that content anywhere else. So like I said, this is a cat and mouse game that's been going on for years, and it's hard to imagine any one thing being pivotal and turning the tide one way or the other, but this is potentially quite big.
And that is all we have time for this episode. Thank you so much, Max, for hanging out today.
Thank you, Marcus.
Yes, yes. And of course, thank you to Alex, who joined us in the first half. Thanks to Victoria, who edits the show, and James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone for listening in. We'll see you tomorrow, hopefully, for the Behind the Numbers weekly listen, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin.